sick of hearing the anti-white message, then you've come to the right place. You're tuned in to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Okay, our final speaker. It doesn't matter what you're doing, as long as you're doing something. Now, I've been on video saying that for the past 5 or 6 weeks, and it's got quite a good response. Those words are not the words of Boadicea Events, they are the words of a true nationalist. That quote comes from a man who has spent about 45 years in nationalism. Please welcome onto the stage, Richard Edmonds.
Well, Paul, thank you very much for those friendly words. Ladies and gentlemen, fellow patriots, as all the earlier speakers have said, I congratulate the organisers for organising this splendid meeting here up in the Northwest, and it's especially appropriate that this meeting is in the name of the British Queen, Boadicea. Boadicea was a very important part of our history some 2,000 years ago, and I think that her spirit may yet live amongst us. It's been a great afternoon. There's been a whole range of speakers, and I can inform you, if you don't know already, that meetings like this are now taking place up and down this country. 2 weeks ago, there was a fine meeting in Preston. There's also been meetings in Bradford. There was a meeting in Cardiff some 12 months ago, I think. There's been meetings in Swindon, and there's regular meetings in London and elsewhere in the United Kingdom. And I know that our movement is at the moment fractured and somewhat disorganised. We all know that, and I'm going to refer to that a little bit later. But these movements are holding us all together, whereby we act as mature British patriots and white men and women in defence of our civilisation across the whole white world. We've had at least one American speaker here today, and America is almost as important to us as Britain is to ourselves. You know, we Britons don't forget that we founded North America with those 13 colonies that we placed on the other side of the Atlantic, with men with names like Washington, etc. However, I would just like, there's been a great range of speakers, and I'd just like to refer briefly to two of the former speakers. I'd like to thank the organisers for inviting both Milton Ellis and myself on this stage, because both Milton and I are active members with the National Front, and I've not come here on this occasion to promote the National Front, but the National Front last week celebrated 50 years of the National Front, which is quite an achievement. Given all the problems that, you know, the blood, sweat and tears and the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune that we British patriots are subjected to. And across on the table there's some NF literature, if you're mindful to take it. I'll just draw your attention to the fact that we in the National Front believe in keeping things very simple. Hence the slogan on our leaflet, "We want our country back." And I think that more or less says everything that people want to hear. The other speaker that I'd like to refer to was the very first speaker, Dennis Shambly, when he referred to how his grandfather had served and suffered in the First World War and had got nothing good out of his sufferings in the First World War, and how his Dennis Shambly's own father served and suffered in the Second World War and was at Dunkirk, for example, and how both these men, his grandfather and his father, got nothing good out of their sufferings and their service. And Dennis Shambly explained that one of his motives for being an active British nationalist was the injustice suffered by his grandfather and his father. And I would like to make a reference, because I am the same generation of this Dennis Shamley. He was born in the Second World War, so was I. My father had the good fortune, served in the forces from 39, and my father was still there in 45. But my mother's brother, and my mother was very close to her brother, my mother's brother was killed in the war, an active service. And when I was a child, growing up in the 1950s, when I was a teenager in the 1960s, I continually heard my mother refer to the death on active service of her own brother. And she would say, what good did his death bring? And she'd always answer the question in the same way. Nothing good came of the death of my brother. And when I was listening to Dennis Shamley, I was thinking of my own mother. And I'll tell you, ladies and gentlemen, I am motivated in part by the experiences of my family during that Second World War and the families of others across the white world, I might say, who suffered in that Second World War. Perhaps on another occasion, we can talk about the Second World War. However, on this occasion, I want to focus on our movement, I want to focus on Britain, because our movement is at a turning point, we all know that, and our Britain stands at a crossroads. There has been so much immigration into Britain, and the betrayal committed by the party politicians at Westminster has been so great that now Mohammed is the top name for newborn baby boys born as right across the whole of England and Wales. Mohammed is now the top name. And we native British are at risk of becoming a minority in our own major cities. We're at risk of becoming a minority in London, Manchester, Birmingham, Bradford, Nottingham, Leicester. And that is the betrayal committed by the party politicians, Tory politicians, Labour politicians, Liberal Democrat politicians. It makes no difference. When they're in government, we have the same betrayal, whatever party is in power. They are all the same. That's a lesson the British people have got to learn. That Lib, Lab and Con, as they're called, are all the same. And meantime, our nationalist movement is also at the crossroads. We are witnessing now the breakup of the civic nationalist and multiracial UKIP party. You study the candidates that UKIP put out. They put up lots of black candidates, they put up lots of Asian candidates, and at the mayoral elections in Manchester in the spring, they put up an Orthodox Jew as their candidate. So that the fact that UKIP is disappearing is, from one point of view, a very welcome development, that this multiracial party should disappear. That's one aspect of nationalism being at the crossroads. And as we know, our former party, the British National Party, the party we put so much hope into and so much work into, you know, blood, sweat and tears, all of that, is now ruined and destroyed by, I will say, an inept leadership clique. I won't go any further. I don't believe in crying over spilt milk. And if we can't overcome the little problems caused by two or three or four or five little people, then we couldn't punch ourselves our way out of a wet paper bag. And we are the British people, and we're speaking in the name of Queen Boadicea. So we haven't got to cry too much over minor problems. The fact is, life continues. So that is one side of the crossroads facing the British people. The mass betrayal of mass immigration committed by the party politicians at Westminster and elsewhere, and as we're all very, very conscious of, the present disorganized and fractured state of our nationalist movement. And that's what I've come up here to speak about. Because there is another side, another branch at a crossroads in front of all of us. I've described the one branch, there's another branch of this crossroads. And that is the huge, unprecedented, winning 17.5 million Brexit votes at the Euro referendum. Because that vote was clearly and obviously a vote against immigration. It was a vote against us being swamped out in our own country by umpteen millions and millions of foreigners. And that vote was, and I intend coming to this, a game changer. Because I happen to be 74 years of age. And I am old enough to remember a white Britain. A white Britain. I happen to live in London, where I was brought up as a child. My mother was bombed out at one stage. I tell you, it's all burnt in my brain box. My mother was bombed out. I've lived most of my life in London. I have had interesting jobs abroad at various times. I've lived in Australia. I've lived in Canada. I lived in Russia and worked in Russia for a time. Vinya Mojna Gavari Baruski. Mind you, I'm not the only clever person in this room who's good at foreign lingos. We've got Alison here who's so clever, she's got to be in court next week in London because she's so clever. I think later on you might get a chance to see how talented Alison is. We're at a fork in the road of the mass betrayal committed by the politicians of mass immigration and the present disorganized and fractured state of our movement. But on the other side, we have all witnessed and participated in this huge, unprecedented success. I say unprecedented because that vote was the first opportunity the British people have had to express an opinion on mass coloured immigration into this country since it started in the 1950s. Before the 1950s, Britain was effectively, without going into certain other subjects, effectively 100% white British country. I'm well aware there's another dimension to what I've just said, but we'll leave that to one side for the moment. As far as the Third World Invasion was concerned, this was a white country, and that vote... The Euro vote last year was the first occasion when the British people had a chance to vote a straight yes or no to immigration. And the Brexit vote was a resounding rejection of both mass coloured immigration and the party politicians at Westminster and elsewhere responsible for forcing this nightmare onto us. Now, we nationalists, because we are patriots, and because we're in touch with the British people, because we come from the British people, we nationalists have always known that there is a healthy, patriotic majority in this country. And we have always known that given a chance, the majority of British people would reject the failure politicians at Westminster, because, and I don't need to spell this out to you, but my own satisfaction, and possibly for yours, hopefully, I will. The British people have never wanted millions from the Third World forced onto us. The British people have never wanted to be swamped by alien cultures. And the older ones in this room will remember where that phrase came from. The British people have never wanted to be swamped by alien cultures. They have never wanted their cities to become permanent crime and riot zones. They have never wanted muggers in our streets attacking and robbing elderly folk. The British people have never wanted bloody murder committed in this country in the name of some alien god. And the British people have never wanted vile, criminal Asian grooming gangs to commit their vile crimes against defenceless white children for years and years and years, for children, underage girls, to be sexually abused, raped, sold into prostitution. For years and years and years, crimes committed with impunity, crimes committed with impunity right across the north of England and elsewhere. Crimes, the crimes of the vile criminal Asian grooming gangs, crimes committed with the full knowledge of the authorities who deliberately, for years and years and years, turned a blind eye to the vile crimes committed by those vile criminals against defenceless white children. I tell you, friends, the people who run this country, the political establishment, the Labour politicians, the Tory politicians, the Liberal Democrat politicians, they are vile, utterly vile and heartless, and they care nothing for the British people. Friends, as we meet here today, these last few weeks, and it's continuing, there is an official inquiry being organised into the sexual abuse of children in this country. Now, one might well think that that inquiry could have been organised decades ago. And I will say to you that the people and the patriots who put this subject of the vile abuse of children on the agenda was nationalists. It was us nationalists who put it on the agenda. And I will mention just one name here, that very, very brave BNP councillor from Rotherham, Marlene Guest, yeah? Marlene Guest was a BNP councillor, the only BNP councillor on Rotherham Council, surrounded by vicious Labour councillors, vicious Liberal Democrat councillors, and vicious Tory councillors. And when Marlene Guest got up and said, "What about the crimes being committed against children in this town?" They denied it. Marlene Guest was in a snake pit, and it was Marlene Guest and others like her who forced this on the front pages of the Times and other papers. And now we have this official inquiry taking place in London. It's being led by a top lawyer, a QC, a Queen's Counsellor. And they are focusing at the moment. This official inquiry is focusing on the former Liberal Democrat Member of Parliament for Rochdale, and that is Cyril Smith. Now, Cyril Smith, before he switched parties, was a Labour Party activist in that town, and at one time he was a Labour Party councillor in Rochdale. Then it suited him to switch parties, and he got himself elected as the Member of Parliament for Rochdale. Now, it has been revealed now, officially revealed with evidence at this inquiry, that the police themselves had for decades, ever since the 1970s, the police had been producing confidential reports passed up the ladder, revealing that they knew that Cyril Smith, local MP, former Labour councillor, that Cyril Smith had for decades sexually abused boys in a local council care chamber. And this official inquiry has heard evidence that these reports produced by the police and passed up the chain of command had been totally ignored and deliberately ignored. The crimes of Cyril Smith had been deliberately covered up. This court of this inquiry has learned evidence from the police themselves and from MI5 that a decision was taken at the very highest political level. I'll come to that in a second. A decision was taken at the very highest political level to shelve the police reports and to cover up the crimes that Cyril Smith had committed and the crimes that were known to the police for decades, ever since the 1970s. And the phrase that the decision to cover up the crimes of Cyril Smith, that the decision to make, that decision was taken at the highest political level, and that phrase can be understood to be in the Prime Minister's office. Now, whether it involved the Prime Minister herself, I'll come to her in a minute, or not, it was certainly taken at the highest political level to cover up the crimes of Cyril Smith. And further, that's not enough, further, a decision was made by Margaret Thatcher's Tory government in 1988. A decision was made by Margaret Thatcher's Tory government and her office. Whether she knew, I don't know. That's not been revealed. But her office had, it was drawn to her office, these police reports on Cyril Smith's activities. And in spite of that, Margaret Thatcher's Tory government decided to award Cyril Smith with a knighthood. So it was a case of arise, Sir Cyril Smith. Decades of abuse of boys, decades of abuse rewarded by the utterly corrupt establishment with a knighthood. Now, friends, I have come up here to say all this that I'm this official government report. If you read the BBC or the Times or the Guardian newspaper, they've got all these reports if you read all this stuff. I have come up here to say this to you, dear friends. We, the British people, we don't have to accept the trash, this trash at Westminster and elsewhere that's ruling over us. We know now, if we didn't know it before, we know now that there is a healthy, patriotic majority in this country. We saw that with the Brexit vote at the referendum. And I'll go off in a little tangent here, with regard to the Brexit vote, never mind for the moment what Theresa May and the Tories are attempting to do with this Brexit vote. The fact is, that referendum vote rejected the Tories, plus Labour, plus the Liberal Democrat, into the political dustbin of politics. And they know it. Rows going inside the Tory. The political battle now, forget about UKIP, the political battle now is inside the Tory party. And they're rowing because they know that they've been rejected big time by that vote. So this is the crossroads that we are all of us at. We had a brave party that stood up for the British people. Earlier speakers have spoken about, use the voice. The BNP was the voice and the champion of the British people. Was in the past tense. That party, unfortunately, no more, destroyed, as I've said, by an incapable ruling clique. Ladies and gentlemen, friends, and I think this is the point that all the earlier speakers are making, what matters now is that we seize the opportunity opening up to us. The BNP is finished, UKIP is collapsing, and will soon be gone completely, and the political establishment is exposed and rejected. And I put it to you, I'm so glad that you're organising this meeting up here in the North West. Look, it was in the North West you had the big breakthrough with Steve Smith in Burnley, right? That was it, 2002. Listen, I was living in Russia in 2002. I'm living in Russia, right? And that's another story. Russia's another country. But I got, well, I'll tell you the secret. I never drink alcohol. And so I'll tell you, I don't make myself a fool with women either. You know, look, if you live in a little village, they all look at you. Who's this long, tall Englishman? What's he doing in our Russian village? So, I hope I was a diplomat for Blighty. However, I was living in the muddy wastes of Russia. And that's a muddy country, in the middle of the winter. In the middle, a little Russian village. I wasn't living in Moscow, I was in Petersburg. I was living in a right muddy little village. They used to milk the cows, lots like that in the field. I thought, I'm back in 200 years ago, all these milkmaids everywhere. Anyway.
I did that.
Yeah, well done, sir. Well done, well done, sir. A real man, well done. Anyway, I was living in Russia, and I got the news. 2000, Steve Smith got all these counsellors. So I thought, well, boys, I've got to get back into this. So I said goodbye to all the Russians and got back to Blighty. And we know what that BNP did. I was a member of the British National Party. We had 50 elected borough councillors. We had a further 50 local district councillors. And you had a county councillor for Lancashire. That very, very brave and wonderful woman, Sharon Wilkinson, yeah? She was ten years a councillor in Burnley, and then a county councillor, a very, very fine and charming person. In addition to Sharon Wilkinson, county councillor for Lancashire, we had a Euro member for the North West. I remember some chappy or other was the Euro member for the North West. There was also another Euro member over there in Yorkshire. And down south in London, we had a BNP man on the Greater London Council, on the Greater London Assembly, yeah? Ah, that was great to be alive, as somebody once said. Great. So, we know what we can do. So, friends, in conclusion, this meeting, been a great afternoon. This meeting, I tell you, I have some bad luck, some. I have good luck and bad luck. The train I was coming up on worked fine. But the one in front caught fire. They didn't tell us what happened there, but caught fire. I don't know whether the British Railway sandwiches got overheated or something. Anyway, that's why I got here a bit late. Anyway, it's been a great afternoon. But let me say, in conclusion, Bodicea events. I want to talk about an event that Bodicea was responsible for 2,000 years ago. This British queen, this British Celtic queen, Bodicea, knew how to make invaders and uninvited guests feel unwelcome. Bodicea was the Celtic British queen 2,000 years ago, yeah? In the first early days of the Roman Empire's occupation of Britain, we're talking here the year 60 Anno Domini, 60 AD, yeah? Bodicea marched with an army on Roman Britain. Well, She marched on Roman London, and she utterly destroyed the city. She killed everybody. She regarded them as traitors, of course. She represented Britain. And she was objecting to this foreign enclave, the Roman Empire, pushing itself onto our country. So she attacked Roman London. She killed everybody in the city and burnt it completely to the ground. In fact, had she possessed an atom bomb at the time, she could have done more damage to that city than if she had dropped one on it. Now, 2,000 years later, an appreciated British, 2,000 years later, an appreciated British public, in memory of this valiant defender, she took on the whole Roman Empire. She was not a nobody. I can tell you, she suffered. She suffered at the hand of the Romans. So did her daughters. She had good reason to do what she did. If you know the history of Queen Bodicea. Anyway, a grateful British public, 2,000 years later, not forgetting this valiant heroine of theirs, constructed that famous statue, yeah? Opposite Big Ben. Opposite Big Ben. House of Parliament by the River Thames. I remember when I was a kid, you know, I come from London, I'm sure every, I don't know about girls, but every boy had looked at that chariot, particularly the swords coming out the axles, right? Designed to bring the Romans down a foot or two, it cut the Romans down to side. And I remember as a boy, the first time I gawked up at that statue, this statue here, Queen Boadicea. So, friends, in the spirit of Queen Boadicea, let's clean this country up.
Alternative to the anti-white system on Radio Aryan.com.